Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 74. This is No Spin Rodeo. Joined here by the production wizard, Greg Teagarden, and of course, the first lady of pro rodeo journalism, Kendra Santos. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the post-Labor Day get-together. How was your Labor Day? Oh, Kendra, you're first. How was your Labor Day?
Mine was absolutely fabulous. I was kayaking. And I know that is so random and cool, but I went with my brother Wade to see our mom, and we hit the water. It was very fun.
Really? And were you in a tank / pond, or were you in a river, or were you in a lake? We need a little more kayaking details.
We were in the San Francisco Bay.
Oh.
And so to your left is the Bay Bridge and the whole view of the city, and then over yonder to the right, the Golden Gate Bridge. It was so beautiful and so cool and so unusual for me, you know, not at a rodeo. It was just really exactly, because last week the deadlines that I met were insanity, NFR related mostly, and to just go take a breath was amazing.
Well, congratulations. Greg, I think you had a weekend at home, or am I lying?
Nope, that's exactly right. And I did absolutely nothing. I just sat and enjoyed the weather and did nothing. It was great. I had a little barbecue yesterday, but that was about it.
Well, I fixed three toilets. By the way, it's a little more complicated to put those plungers in the back than you think. And don't disconnect the bottom without draining the tank, or you have a mild water problem. And the residual, like messing with the toilet's not cool. But I did fix three toilets that flush aggressively now. Like, nothing's not going where it's supposed to go anymore. And so I got that fixed and worked on an RV because we're on our way to Pendleton for the Expos finale at Happy Canyon next week. So I did a lot of RV repair. RVs, I've decided, are just like horses. If you don't use them, they break. If you use them, they break. And the one thing that you can plan on is you're going to spend a lot of money on. That's my thing. RVs and horses, very, very similar. So
kind of the same thing with a boat.
Yeah, boat's probably the same way. Yeah.
Yep.
A kayak, much less
yes,
with a kayak.
Easy.
I mean, yeah, there's not a lot to break on a kayak, except maybe the seatbelt. Anyway, so let's get started. We'll make this one fun and exciting like always. We want to thank all of you for joining us live. If you're listening to us on the podcast, thanks for tuning in. We sure appreciate it. Kendra, you want to catch us up behind the chutes? What's big on your headlines in the rodeo world?
For one thing, a little salt on the wound for you to talk to the girl who's been without water for 10 days from a house flood about plumbing issues.
This is true. You don't even have water to flush your commode. So see, I should not be complaining.
My beautiful new toilet is inside of my beautiful new shower from the house flood from a couple years ago. And so I look at it and I'm like, they're sure pretty, but not really with the toilet inside. So anyway, let's.
Okay, good. That's good.
No, but I will tell you, I laugh because I'm really trying so hard to be healthy. And in the morning, I do have smoothies. It was highly recommended to me that I should be adding organic dandelion greens to my smoothies because it has all these health properties. And what I realized, because of not having plumbing in my house and I wash my dishes with the hose out on the lawn, is that I have organic dandelion greens in my lawn.
I thought you were going to say the organic dandelion greens acted as if they were a fiber. I thought you were going someone else, but I'm glad that it's in the yard.
At any rate, okay, so Ellensburg. What a great rodeo. I had a blast when I went up there.
103rd. 103rd, right?
Really cool. And, you know, their opening where they bring the Native Americans, I think they even call them Yakima Indians up there, you know, off the hill in all their native dress. It's really cool. And I got a kick out of, because of course it was all recorded and when I got home, I binge watched it. But there was one guy, clearly a Yakima Indian, and he rode amongst them all with their full native gear, dressed as a cowboy. And I just thought, you know what, this guy's cool. But it just ended Labor Day, Monday, September 1st, yesterday. So of note, there was a few different, well, as usual, about everything had notes, but there was a three-way tie in the Big Red Riding. Cole Franks, Bradley Miller, and last year's Ellensburg champ, Jess Hope. Three-way tie. Okay, for the win. Cole Franks did set a new Ellensburg arena record by half a point with 90.5 in the short round on Calgary's disco party. So that was pretty exciting. And Bradley Miller, of course, just came back from an injury timeout and is second only to Rucker Steiner even after taking a break. So good for him. There's, you know, here we are in September, so we're down the backstretch of the regular season, right? So there's going to be lots of bubble talk and people moving in and moving out. And, of course, Ellensburg's one of the, you know, big stops, you know, as we wind it down here. Cole Clemens from Florida, he won the tie down, and he was 24th before Ellensburg and did scoot up, I think, four spots to 20th. Special shout out to Cole Clemens and Dylan Hancock for their balls to go ahead and enter the Wild Cow Milking, which was absolutely hilarious to watch. And they were fearless and it was fun. And over the years, you know, a lot of guys, I know Oat used to enter. He used to mug and rope, but it's really fun. That is a fun event when you have huge, strong cows. And it was really fun to watch guys like that. Okay, Bo Peterson and Martha Angeloni split the breakaway. Martha was 25th. You know, she's won a world title in the last few years. She was 25th before Ellensburg, so that was a huge win. And I went to look today, and I was really hoping I could see how much it scooted her up on the world standings, but their world standings will not be updated until tomorrow because of the holidays. So, you know, the PRCA, theirs are overnight updated, even after the holiday. So defending world champion steer wrestler J.D. Struxness won the Bulldog in at Ellensburg for the third time in 3 years. I think in 4 years.
Impressive.
He won 2022, 2023, and 2025. That's super impressive. And is right now calling on his young team of horses because some other ones needed a break. Aussie Damian Brennan won the Bronc Riding, called it a bucket list win. That was cool. JC Yaquo and Rosh Ashford desperately needed to win. They won the team roping and they went from 19th, you know, and so 19th in the world. And now they're really close within striking distance of the top 15. In the barrel race, again, the WPRA standings aren't updated, but Summer Cosell. She was 18th, and she and Apollo won Ellensburg, and I did my own, and she won $10,500 at Ellensburg and went from 18th to, she's going to be tapping on Wenda Johnson, who's 15th right now, on her shoulder The only wild card thing there is I don't know what Wenda did at other rodeos. She wasn't, I didn't get in Lawrenceburg, but she may have done some good in some other places. I don't know. Okay, Hudson Bolton in the bull riding. He's 19. My understanding, he was the PBR Rookie of the Year last year, and he's in the lead for the PRCA's Rookie of the Year this year. He's 10th in the world, and the rookie race in the bull riding in recent years has been so amazing, and it is right now, too. Like, Hudson Bolton and Aussie Quinn Anderson, they're like neck and neck. They're probably almost certainly both going to be at the NFR. That's pretty cool for a couple of rookies. And Stetson Wright, he won the all-around at Ellensburg. He won the X-Bulls at Ellensburg. And he stuck it on a bull that went away from his hand in the short round, and he won second. So he made a heck of a move at Ellensburg. I of a note of people only cowboys, right? Kansas bull rider J.R. Stratford, he's 7th in the world right now. He rode in the short round yesterday. He had broken his collarbone the night before and the week before dislocated his elbow, but he's still riding, you know?
Mm. And it doesn't matter if that's, I mean, even with the free arm, so someone's like, oh, arm side, that's where all your motion is in the free arm, right? And I, oof. That takes balls.
Anyway,
that's where you got
A few. Okay, moving beyond Ellensburg, a few fun rodeo notes. Brenda Allen, my dear friend. Okay, the Wrangler Bullfights Hall of Fame Class of 2025. They're recognizing Brenda Allen, who was like a very well known photographer in rodeo, and you know, shot the NFR, the BFI, all these sorts of things for a very, very long time, and was the first woman to do a lot of rodeo shooting. I mean, there have been others, and the name of the woman from Arizona is slipping my mind at this moment. She was awesome also. But Brenda, Louis Field's mother-in-law, and Casey Field and his brother Shad and Sister Mackley's grandmother, just a wonderful, cool lady. But I think it's really cool. It's like the Dan and Linda Hubble getting recognized in this year's Hall of Fame at Cheyenne. That's really great because those people, you know, they're a huge part of documenting history. So good. Congratulations to Brenda Allen. The Casey Tibbs Foundation, South Dakota Rodeo Center, their foundation tribute dinner will be held November 1st at the Casey Tibbs Rodeo Center in Pierce, South Dakota. Have you ever been there?
I have not.
Okay, I've been there twice, and once was Oat was recognized, and then once the Berry family was recognized. But it's so cool, and all the South Dakota ranching and rodeo families get together there, and you know, in Casey Tibbs' hometown, and there are the neatest staff of Casey Tibbs and others from South Dakota. But anyway, this year's honorees: rodeo cowgirl great Christy Steffes, rodeo cowboy great Cole Elshear, past rodeo great Cliff Glade. I don't know him, but I'll be curious to know more about that. Rodeo promoter Jordan Tierney, who's now Jordan Santos, who's my daughter-in-law. Ranch family, Joe Stoddard family. And animal athlete Paul Tierney's Coffee Jeff. So cool for my daughter-in-law, who was Miss Rodeo America 2020 and 2021. I got a kick out of this because I was like, who's Coffee Jeff, this horse, this calf horse that's going to be recognized? So I asked a couple questions about this today, and I get a kick out of this. So Paul Tierney, who are my in-laws now, we share a grandbaby. He bought this horse that's being recognized at this Hall of Fame at the Black Hill Stock Show in 1976 for $460 because he hooked a stirrup on the gate going into the sale ring, kicked off the hinge before bucking across the ring. So $460, the only other guy bidding on him was going to use him to hunt coyotes. And anyway, Paul figured for $460. I mean, a 9-year-old prospect is kind of weird, but he thought, well, maybe he could be like a practice horse or something. He won the 1979 World Calf Roping title and the 1980 World All Around Championship riding a $460 horse, which
that's cool.
I love that kind of stuff. So anyway, okay, another thing that I just noticed, one of our most popular episodes of No Spin Rodeo was the one about suicide awareness prevention, you know, recognizing the signs. And the Canadian Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame had their inductions about a week ago, and Ty Pozzebon was honored. And for those who don't remember, he was a very talented rider. He was 25 years old, and he suffered from CTE, from a lot of concussions related to his line of work. So that was really special for his family and friends. So that, you know, cool. I did just see on a sad note that D&H Cattle Company just lost their bull of the 2024 NFR and reserve bull of the year last year, Ricky Vaughn, on August 30th. And that bull had bucked 3 years in the PRCA and was unridden, which is something in this day and age. And I also would mention a congratulations to team roper Lightning Aguilera and Shandy Britt, who just got married on August 30th. Lightning has been riding the bubble. He and Wyatt Cox, his team roping partner right now, major ride the bubble. So I thought, you know, that was some kind of wild, gutsy wedding planning to have that this weekend, right? But congratulations to the Aguileras. Oat and I were seated, you know, just coincidentally with Lightning's family the last time he was at the NFR, and we had such a good time. What a nice family. So anyway, what you got?
Well, I don't have a whole lot. Haven Medjid, it's good to see that he's winning, because the last time that I personally talked to him, he was just coming off his back injury, just getting back. He had a wreck, remember I told you about that, ruined the front of his good trailer, and he did not look positive. And I'm glad to see that he's doing better, has some wins, crawling up the ranks. I think he's back in the top 15, which is great for Haven. I like Haven. And I'm going to say something. You eloquently delivered a lot of details on the bubble. But isn't it true right now it's not fair to say that doesn't matter, because every dollar matters. So I'm not going to say that it doesn't matter. However, the true coin flip here is the people, correct me if I'm wrong, Kendra, the people that have paid attention to their tour standings and are hitting the playoffs. Because if a little bit of research I did is correct, I'm not going to go through all the disciplines, but there's several in every top 15 that are not going to Puyallup and you know, don't have their tour points. And isn't it fair to say, with the money that's going to be won in, I don't know, those three events that are coming up, that's going to pretty much wipe someone out? You know, that's on the bubble, especially if
they're not. But just because they're not there doesn't mean they didn't try, you know? And well, I have a personal example right in front of me of a son who came back halfway through the year, who wasn't able to get into enough events to even have a chance. But people, how you do at the tour rodeos, most of these guys are savvy enough to make sure that they're not going to just, they weren't avoiding the tour rodeos. You know what I mean? Maybe they didn't do any good at them, but I can't believe that they wouldn't have tried, because, man, anybody who doesn't think it's important to be at Puyallup and Sioux Falls,
yeah, I don't think they don't think it's important. We've talked in the past. There's been some slip ups in paying attention to what rodeos count and stuff historically. And I'm not saying any of that affected. My only point is, if you look at the standings now, they're significantly going to go through the bingo ball before the end of the season. right? And because there's a lot of money to be won. I love it. I know that most kind of historical rodeo people are, you know, they're attuned and really gravitate towards the grind and grinding and winning and going up. And I don't disagree with that. I think that has its merits. But the fact that someone could get into one of these tour rodeos and maybe, you know, outside the bubble or on the bubble and really knock it out of the park and run up the charts, I think that just creates a lot more things to think about and engage. And I think there's an argument for those people to say, well, that person went to 7,000 rodeos and won $1,000 at every rodeo and tried his butt off or tried her butt off. But I like the playoff stuff. I mean, I like to see big money. We all like big money. You can't knock big money. And the chance, right, to prove in that big setting that you belong, win enough money, and like I said, shake up the standings. Because there's going to be, we'll be talking about a lot of different people, I think, at the top. Now, you know, if you look at the Stetsons and, you know, there's a handful of these people that are just, you know, they're going to do good there too, because they're, you know, cream rises to the top, whether you're in Puyallup or Sioux Falls or wherever. I agree with that. But I think, you know, it's interesting to look at the standings now, but when I look at them, I'm like, well, you know, at the end of the day, but you know, it's been dollars that have put people in the NFR. So I'm arguing with myself here. It all matters, but be ready, because things are going to change up, right?
Well, I think it just adds an extra dimension when some of the, you know, biggest paying rodeos are right at the finish line, you know? And so I always was like, when we used to have arguments about, you know, whether or not Houston's money should count, I was like, well, I think it should, because then that led to, you know, some friendly competition. And then San Antonio added more money because they wanted to be in the same league. And my way of thinking was, you know, ultimately, if we start with a couple of them, you know, maybe we can just keep building on that. But you don't ever want to turn money away, right? I mean, you want to have a lot. Big money is what we, you know, wouldn't it be the greatest if we had 20 or 30 majors, you know?
You've got a lot. You know, we talked about last time. I don't think it's a theory what you're saying anymore. I think it's a reality. Money counting forces other road to compete, and there's money there's ever been. I think it's 100% because of that. I don't think it's a theory. I think it's reality. Let every dollar count. Don't punish a rodeo for wanting to be big or bigger or the biggest.
Hey, but what I haven't yet gotten an explanation why 80% of Calgary's money counts instead of 100.
There's a lot of Calgary we haven't gotten an explanation. And that book, that story, over yet. I think there'll be some more headlines on Calgary. We'll see. But that's the whole deal ain't over yet. That's what I think. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But I don't know, but I don't know. It's stupid. But anyway, explain it. It is what it is. But I agree with you. Why wasn't team roping equal? I mean, you know, here's the one thing I keep hearing from the board of directors of the PRCA in comments with other rodeos and even in some of the discussions, that we have to be consistent. Seriously? Like, okay, let me read you. I mean, just what we're talking about, right? You know, I just think, look, if you're gonna be rule followers, be rule followers. Then that means everybody follows the rules, right? Don't pick and choose. And if you're then, or why not just admit it? Hey, we don't really want to argue. We want to do this, but we're not really going to force it, right? Just own it. Own it. It's kind of whatever we feel like today.
It's actually unfair to not have everyone follow the same rules or everyone be treated the same. Back to the Cowboys Turtles was part of the point, right?
I agree, but that's not reality.
A very long time to get that rule book. So yeah, it does seem like we would respect the rule book.
Yeah. You know, and so you can't blame other rodeos for coming in and asking for ground rules and sanctioning when they see other rodeos approved that way, right? I mean, you know, well, you can't. How dare you ask for that? What do you mean, how dare I ask for that? You approved three events. Well, that doesn't really matter. Okay. Whatever. All right. Sorry, I just got on a small.
No, but that's the problem with rules. Where's the line?
You lose your credibility. All right. Well, that was really cool behind the shoot stuff. I had a couple follow-up things I wanted to bring up. Do you remember when we had the conversation and we both reached out in Rolodex primaries at Teton Ridge concerning the American? When we had heard rumors that they may not be rolling $1 million, you know, if you don't win the million, historically, that has rolled over to the next year, right? And I don't even know if you recall that conversation, and we never got a response. Well, that's kind of yellow flag number one. Well, I did think it was very interesting, and one of my no spinner insiders forwarded this to me, that Jenna Moore, who is one of their, I don't know the exact title of Jenna, but she does a lot of the social media and manages a lot of the social media for Teton Ridge. She does a really good job. But there's a clip of her, and I may not get all of the facts right, so don't nail me to the wood right here, but I'm pretty sure I've got this right. Her clip was talking to Brazilian bull riders in Brazil, because I do think they're doing one of the big events in Brazil is qualifying as in cowgirls. And so she was presentation, and what I thought was pointed out to me is that she said, you know, we want you bull that $1 million. And in that same line, she referenced the $2 million that Pacheco had won, you know, when he did it. But when she said, we want you to win that $1 million, I wonder if that's not another flag that they're not rolling that million over. I'm just going by what was said, and that may not have been intentional, but it does make me wonder. I'm still not getting any responses on that, by the way. I reached back out, stone cold silence.
Right, and for those who don't remember, so when no one won the million at the American in 2021, then in 2022, bull rider Kaique Pacheco won $2.1 million at that one rodeo. And now no
one... With a qualification on a buck-off time.
Just saying, that's a small detail. So yes, I don't know. I haven't heard a peep about it. Of course, you know, the Cowboys, everybody wants to know, naturally.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with that, but I think it's leaning towards the no flashcard. The other thing is, we talked a little bit about, it's been in the news a little bit, about Dr. Phil and Merritt Street Media. Remember, we had Sean Gleason on. I thought a little bit of PBR media stuff. I did think I read a post from Mr. Gleason, with all due respect to Mr. Gleason. And when, this was a while back. And he said, you know, we're on 8 different networks, have 8 or 12 hours of programming on. There's more bull riding than ever on before. And hey, fans, how dare you complain about trying to find us? Just go watch us. So he did kind of scold the fans a little bit on that. But rolling back to the Merritt Street Media, remember they did a deal with Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil seems like the guy that, like of anybody that you can trust, it's Dr. Phil. I mean, come on. He's wrong with you inside. He fixes things. Anyway, so remember they abruptly went to Dr. Phil's Merritt Street and like a meeting, and because the PR wasn't getting, they spent a long time promoting Dr. Phil and watch everything on Dr. Phil, da 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 da. Well, that went south, and we knew, we talked about the fact that there was joint litigation, people suing people. And I suspected at the time, you know, I think we said, you know, we'll just have to wait and see if we get more details on this. Well, some are seeping out, and I think they're interesting. It's coming out now. Don't know if this is fact or fiction, because you don't know what you can believe anymore in any media. But that Dr. Phil, Merritt Street Media, is selling their assets to a new entity. They moved all their major assets over to a new entity right before they recently filed for bankruptcy. This is Merritt Street Media filed for bankruptcy. Wow, that seems, that's not very cowboy to shift all of your stuff so that you don't lose it. And it makes me wonder if there's not, if PBR and TKO and all those guys that are after them for breach of contract don't have something in their corner, because if you want to shift all your assets over so that the property be sued left, you can squeeze a lemon with no juice, you know. So I think
that doesn't sound like a legal maneuver. I mean, really, that'd be like, you know, yeah, I'm going to move all my assets and then file bankruptcy. That sounds so not legal.
Well, everything with big money people doesn't sound fair, because we all instinctively try to do what's right. Those people don't always do what's right. But it, and so I'm sure this has been uncovered. I guess the PBR presented into evidence. I don't know all the details because I'm getting bits and pieces of different articles, but presented into evidence some texts about these assets moving, right? And da 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 da. So again, it's kind of fun to see, you know, what happens. It'll suck though if PBR wins whatever the lawsuit is, and there's nothing left to pay them with, which may be the exact thing that's happening here. So, you know, there's still, you can catch PBR all over the place. I mean, it's, you can do a lot of outlets for PBR content. There's a lot of content out with their team stuff. So that was a couple updates. The other thing that I wanted to pitch out there is I was watching some of the Ellensburg broadcast, well done, and I noticed in Reno, I'm pretty sure, and I decided not to do this at Salt Lake, but I'm pretty sure they were using drones for sure coverage of the event. And were they using drones during the competition? Either one of you, I mean, Kendra, you avidly watched this, but
they had to be, because they had available overhead shots of in certain events, so there had to be a drone above the arena.
Okay, so we just went, Donna and I went up here to the Swiss Days in Heber City, and we're walking up to walk around some booths on the weekend, and they're flying a drone, and it's one of those, Greg, you can probably comment, but it's like one of those little badass ones, right? I mean, they're like, then this guy had goggles on because he's sitting in the front yard, he's got joysticks, you know, and then that drone sounds like a pissed off giant honeybee going, you know, zero, 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 to the point where I looked around and there's thousands of people. Everybody's looking up trying to figure out what this is and where it is. So here's the thing that I'm wondering. And I reached out to our PRCA friends. Are there any rules for competition about drones zipping over? Because I would have loved to do it, and Greg and I could have done it in Salt Lake, and it is a super cool shot, but I didn't because I was worried about spectator safety and interfering with competition. Have you heard anything about that? There are no rules, I asked. There's no rules about flying drones over a PRCA event during competition currently.
And we, like, we know that people sometimes use overhead wires, like at Houston.
Oh, Greg, you know, and I tried that. It was a massive failure.
But Well, and they do that at the American and different things too. But drones, maybe it's just so recent that there's no rule about it. I thought it was really interesting. Sometimes, like, they would, you know, showing us around the arena and then mentioning that they're going to do a major overhaul on the stadium. And then, oh, and by the way, here's the Yakima River, I think it is, that, you know, flows right here. And, you know, I thought it was kind of fun. But then every once in a while, there was like an overhead of, say, you know, a barrel racing run or something. And I mean, I don't know how high up there they are. I don't.
Well, so I got a question for Greg. Greg, you're a licensed phone, like, you've got all your licenses. Tell us, what are the rules currently, or do you know? Can you fly them around open spectators like that? And how does that work?
Generally, no. They have laxed the rules recently, but generally, as a pilot, you don't fly over people. You can fly like in the arena, but as long as you don't go over the people, you're fine. Some of those rules go away when you get to a certain weight class of drone. So there's I think it's a 250 gram limit. Once you get under 250 grams, you don't really have any rules.
Hold on, what's 250 grams in pounds?
I don't know off the top of my head.
So like half a pound, if you were guessing?
Yeah, I mean, I can look it up, but I'm not really sure. But it's light.
But I don't care. A half a pound flying plastic object that's 500 feet in the air that comes down is going to mess you up. I know that because I bought the Woozy one time. You know, you throw it, the cowboy boomerang, and it comes back. But I bought the one without the plastic ring. So essentially, it was a helicopter. It had four rings. I bought 10,000 of those for a tour. Well, let me tell you what happens when you chunk the Woozy, the flying helicopter, and it doesn't come back. It can significantly injure anybody, even half a pound, right? And so tell me that you are able, no matter how good of a drone flyer you are, you're not going to fly that over the arena without going over people. No chance.
Yeah, it's so true.
Job. Now, it's so gorgeous.
So some of the stuff that I saw, like, they have a drone that they provide in Clovis, and we use it during competition. He'll fly it out over the arena when we're doing bull riding and other rough stock. We'll actually chase the barrel racer once she goes around the last barrel, and we'll chase her after that. What was surprising me from watching the Ellisburg was that they would take the drone and they would literally fly it up under the canopy up to in the crowd and literally be looking at some like you were standing in the row below them. So that drone was sitting there right up against, I mean, I'm sure someone could have reached up and pulled it right out of the air. That, I don't think it's safe, but it may be legal.
It's cool. I mean, I think it's very cool. It makes for a really cool broadcast. But Kendra, keep your ears out for us, because I can't imagine that thing doesn't somehow interfere with the mind of a competitor or an animal. Maybe not so much in rough stock. I mean, I can see in rough stock. And at the American, you know, that's Skycam. And Skycam is virtually, you don't hear it. It's a four cable system that, you know, what they use in the NFL, you don't hear it. And even then, there's times when I think that thing gets too low, right? Because you'll see a horse look up when it gets too low. So I just wonder, I'm just pitching it out there. I think it's fantastic TV. It's just, Kendra, keep your ears open, because I'm wondering.
The bottom of it is, just like we talked about in the last episode, if it in any way impacts the competition, then it can't happen. So obviously.
How do you prove it? How do you prove it though? I mean, I don't know. I think the PRCA eventually will probably have to get involved unless no competitors complain.
Well, I mean, you know,
it may take a crash to make something happen.
True.
And then I wonder whose insurance is that going to cover? Who's going to cover that?
There, you know, we've been at the NFR before where, you know, world-class barrel horse ducks in front of the barrel or the wrong side or whatever. And then,
oh yeah,
a lot of times it's happened before the internet years ago, but we all gathered around while we looked at the still shots of the stroke going off right in that horse's face, you know? So, I mean, if it impacts the competition, it just can't be allowed by the governing body.
I agree with that. So we'll see if that happens, but it is distracting. Like, if you're sitting there as a fan and that thing's buzzing right in front of your face, maybe there's a coolness factor to it, but after a few minutes, I'd get a giant fly swatter and whack that sucker right out of the air. Right? It was bugging me at Swiss Days, and it was 500 foot in the air, and it was hauling ass around there now. I mean, fast. So, anyway, it's something, you know me, the random stuff that I like to talk about, but I thought that was interesting. Well, so our next thing is we'll wrap up today with a little feedback. Greg, who play some feedback on us, please, sir.
So from the 208, it's Kelly Well, the same question. And I think he's referring to missing and not entering big events and missing them. So he asked Kerry Wardell the same question. He said his travel partner, Lon Lajoie, pronounced that wrong, but
tried. Is that great? Do you know who that is? Do you know who Lon is, Kendra?
Yeah, he was the world champion bareback rider.
How do you say the last name?
Lajoie.
Okay.
He forgot to enter the NFR in 1999. He went to to Hawaii vacation and forgot. Kelly saved the day and called ProCom and entered Lon. Lon went on to win his first gold buckle that year.
So I think what that says is you should probably have a smart traveling partner that's paying attention. And you know what? The truth is, in most of these trucks, Kendra can verify this, there's usually a leader in that game in the trucks. There's the guy that knows how to enter, pays attention to who's entered and not entered, and usually keeps everybody square. Fair, Kendra?
Well, yeah, somebody usually handles the entering. Sometimes somebody else will handle the trades or whatever. But yeah, everybody that I know, as far as the NFR books, written everywhere, they have it in their phone for the alarm to go off. Their traveling partners, their wives, they're not going to miss the books of the NFR, but yes, that is, you do have to enter the NFR, which is a little bit counterintuitive. It's like you qualified, you know, but
how much time do they have? I mean, do the books open and you have until a certain amount of time to enter?
There's they open at X time and they close at X time. And part of it, of course, is, you know, there's a, and then, you know, for example, for injuries. And then there's also a deadline for team rubbers to have to designate their partner, you know, because sometimes people swap right there at the end. Right. But,
or someone,
you know,
doesn't get in and it causes a big shuffle. Yeah. It's so silly that they got to hear the NFR, but okay. So in that case, we're going to follow the rules. Sorry. Here we go. All right.
All right.
Good feedback.
The next one's from the 210. Along with tonight's discussion of unplanned things happening at rodeos, how do they remove a bull or a horse from the arena when they are hurt and the animal can't get up and or walk? The hurt bull at San Angelo and the horse in Austin this past year got me thinking. During rodeos, I've seen calves carried out, put on stretchers, or in the bed of an ATV, UTV, side by side. I did grow up with cows, so I know how we, my dad and uncles, would move hurt animals in a humane way. But how is it handled when hundreds or even thousands are watching? At livestock shows, when a full-grown animal expires or breaks a leg, sometimes they put up a temporary wall while they work and bring tools and equipment. But how do you move or load a full-grown bull or horse weighing 1,000+ pounds with all eyes watching down from above at a rodeo or a PBR event? I really do want to know, how do they do this discreetly?
Very, very carefully, for one thing. And the fact of the matter, when this happens every once in a blue moon, just like when it happens to, you know, a cowboy or a cowgirl, it's like, well, in the case of a bull or a bucking horse or whatever, or that calf horse the other day at Kennewick, it takes a lot of strong cowboys, you know, who know what they're doing. But you see something like that happen, and you'll see guys from both ends of the arena bail in there and help. And, you know, I will say Cotton Rosser, he had one of the first trailers arena side at every rodeo. He was smart and innovative like that, you know, and he still has that at his rodeos. But you know, now, of course, a veterinarian has to be there. But the fact of the matter is, the truth is that, you know, all these cowboys will bail in there, and they will, you know, circle an animal if an animal's down. And it's like if that happened at the ranch or whatever, and they will, you know, every rodeo in theory at least has a plan for something like that happens, you know. But you will see, you know, at the BFI this last year, Caleb Drigger's horse that Marcus Terrio was riding, he had a really weird injury, and he went down, and he was very oddly hurt, but all those team members bailed in there, just like what we're talking about here, and they all got around him, just like Bryce Darrow did the other day when his horse, you know, went down unexpectedly. And they'll hold them down so that they don't struggle. And they'll also sometimes you'll see them tie, you know, some of their legs together. That's for that animal's protection so they don't struggle. You know, maybe if something's, they may have, you know, hurt their stifle or whatever. But if you kick it, you don't want them kicking and floundering because they can hurt themselves further. So everybody's basically trying to calmly, but it takes a ton of collective strength of those cowboys to hold that animal down, keep them as safe as possible, and remove them from the arena to where the vet can work outside the arena, you know? And that's the basic protocol.
Well, I'll add a little bit to that. Cotton was an innovator. When we talk about that trailer, there's been many versions of it. They've had a version at the NFR. Essentially what it is, it's a trailer with a sled on it and a winch, right? And this thing comes out and it has a sled and a winch, and it allows you to place the animal on the sled and then winch him into the trailer. And I have done countless, at all of my events and a lot of the major events that I've been a part of, we actually do tests, runs, live. Denver, Salt Lake, we do test runs of this. Now, I have chosen personally not to do the trailer thing because this is my personal narrative. The sooner that that animal is able to be doctored, the better their chances are. So I want to take that animal and get them into treatment, whatever that is, as fast as possible. Sometimes the trailer thing isn't exactly speedy, okay? I've seen this run a little bit longer. So my goal has always been to innovate and to get an animal out there. So there's a couple things, Kendra, to what you said. God love all the cowboys that come to help. But I've been in situations where just because a guy has a cowboy hat doesn't mean they should come out in the arena and try to help. For one, I hired two very talented pickup men. In rough stock events, if there's an injured animal, we rehearse what those pickup men are going to do to contain that animal so he doesn't further injure himself. I have been a part of events where Dippo the Whippo cowboy runs out there to try to help. he has to be hauled out on a stretcher or he screws the pickup men up. So I have a little problem with that. I think really smart people that know what they're doing encourage them to help. But there's paid professionals there that are there and trained to do a job. So we rehearse. Now, in our case, David Pickering worked with me. Several of us worked with him. And they used to have these kind of big metal sleds. Old school was big metal sled for a big animal with a out they come, come back in and put the animal on the sled. The goal is to tie the animal down or get him contained so he can't injure himself in rough stock and a time to vent horse. Like you said, there's a tie rope. And then the vet's there that if drugs are needed to be administered in the to protect that animal, they can do the situation immediately. But then you want to get them on a stable device and out. And so David Pickering, we developed, David did. He's got this really hard plastic, which slides very, very easily with shoulder straps and handles on the sides cut into it. And we put 1,800 pounds of hay on that at Salt Lake, and seven guys could carry it out. Now, with 1,800 pounds on it. Very humane, very quick. What I like to do is hook that sled to a skid loader. And the reason I like a skid loader is because in my PBR days, we had very small areas to work in because these are hockey buildings, right? And you have one overhead door with, by the way, all these panels in it to load 65 head of bulls. So you have 1 8-foot alley out and you have to be very, very trained to get an injured bull out that alley and onto a medical trailer. We have a medical trailer at every event I do, a trailer designated. The vet knows where the trailer is. The trailer driver knows where the vet clinic is. I'm just telling you, there's a lot put into this at a lot of events to make sure that that animal is taken care of, right? And that the best things are done for it. And so, you know, we use a skid loader. I have a skid loader there in case we have to make a corner because you have the ability to lift, right? And turn a sharp corner with the articulating tracks of a skid loader. And the goal is to get that animal, you know, to where he can be seen and to get into a veterinary care facility that can actually treat the injury, which is critical. I've seen times and times again where animals have been saved because there was a plan. We talked about this earlier and we got them there quickly.
Right. And also remembering, too, that there are also on-site veterinarians to help an animal right then and there. And I would think that there must be certain times when two pickup men, I don't care how handy they are, they need a hand, right?
Well, they do, but they are in the best position to stop a moving horse with their rope and their saddle, period. 17 guys jumping on him to mug him down is not as efficient as a pickup man dropping a loop over his head, dallying him up and stopping him to avoid injury.
Right. And I understand that. And there's this becomes very case by case because, of course, we've seen the magicians that are good, you know, great pickup men are. But depending on what the injury is in this day and age with cell phones in everybody's hand, it's very tricky how you get that animal out. And it's also, you know, I remember really paying attention when I went to Churchill Downs back when. NFR bull rider Carl Nafsker had the horse unbridled. I got to go as his guest to Churchill Downs and watching how they handled it because, you know, a horse went down on the track and how they whisked out there with a trailer. And their feeling there was that it was very quick. And also then everything that happened inside that trailer was contained to view. So, you know, every case by case, and also, you know, those venues we used to go to at the PBR, maybe once you got them out of the arena, you had some privacy backstage. But a lot of times in a wide open, you know, rodeo, well, it might be in view of the concession stand or the carnival or something. So you just want to be really, really careful in 2025.
Well, they should go into a trailer and go at the veterinarian on-site's direction, wherever it is that they can get the best care.
Right.
I mean, that's not brain science. Get them loaded into something so that they can go be cared for. And if you're not, don't have that plan, you should have it. So, all right, good conversation. Mm-hmm. What else we got, Greg?
So from the 613, as you mentioned in tonight's episode about the stupid Sean Davis hired t-shirt guy.
We didn't say that. We did not say the stupid Sean Davis hired t-shirt guy. In full disclosure, we never said that. Go ahead.
Here is a field trivia about the NFR fans in the stands. Remember the little Navajo kid that danced in the aisles of the Thomas and Mack when Derek Begay roped? Well, that's current team roper rookie, header leader for 2025 in the PRCA rookie standings. He was 2024 college national heading champion for Hill College. His name is James Arviso, Derek Begay's nephew. His mother is Derek's sister.
This is right down your alley, Kendra.
Well, yes, to echo your sentiments, I don't believe either one of us called Sean Davis stupid ever. But anyway, yes, James Arviso is indeed Begay's nephew. And not very many years ago, when Begay got in a bind with Horsepower during the NFR, that kid, James Begay, jumped on his buckskin mare, and she did an amazing job. Begay's sister, who is James's mother, is Jamie Arviso, and she is a very, very talented rodeo photographer and ranch photographer. James last June won the 2024 college national finals in Casper, Wyoming, heading for Caden Profili, who coincidentally right now is the 16th place healer in the world standings. So, yes, that is a great connection.
The answers are good in the crowd.
Pardon?
Just for all of you armchair producers out there that, you know, you're sitting out there and you know how to produce the best event because you watched it on the Cowboy Channel, the very best entertainment at all of these rodeos is organic fun. When people are naturally dancing and naturally having a good time, and there are a lot of events out there that plant people to help encourage that. Okay, there's a lot of rodeo clowns and entertainers that do the boogie woogie shoogie, you know, some of them better than others. Sorry, Rump. But, you know, organic fun. Greg switches these shows, right? And when he sees something in the camera, this is just, it's fans actually having a good time. You got to have a good music director, having a good time and dancing, right? But you got to be careful at the same time. You got Sister Buckle Bunny, who decides it's really good in her tank top to do the twister. So, you know, there's just a lot to this, almost like the sled thing. Okay. So, enough with the stupid Sean Davis. Now, the guy that is dancing does have a dad bod now. They probably could get some other.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that's part of his cover because, you know, if he was, you know,
his cover, I could spot him in Walmart today.
I could
see him. So could you. We all could. We go, hey, you. Oh, you over there by the Bengay. You're the dancer from the NFR, aren't you? You've been there for 15 years.
Yeah, but surely not everybody is. Well, maybe a lot of people actually are at every turf and recognize them. To me, the dad bod kind of is a little bit of a cover because he's not like clearly a Chippendales dancer that they hired, you know. I don't know. Anyway.
All right. Well, enough about silly dancer guy.
All right. Last one. Yep. It's from the 303. Did anyone see the Ellensburg rodeo on Dale Brisby's YouTube channel?
Did you see that, Kendra?
No.
Okay. Greg shared it with me. I watched some of it. So Kendra, because you scolded me last time. You're an avid football fan. Have you watched the Peyton Manning cast in NFL where Peyton and his brother Eli sit there in two boxes and they have the football game in another box, and Peyton and Eli talk about random stuff, primarily football, but random stuff. And I think Eli is the smart one. No, Peyton's the smart one. Eli, he doesn't win any Sudoku classes. But so they talk about it, and it's kind of random. And I tried to watch that, and it didn't do it for me. They have a lot of viewers. And so Teton Ridge, I think, released, this was a Teton Ridge initiative. Hats off for them for trying new stuff. They had Dale Brisby and I think Cody Webster, right? I think it was, yes. Cody Webster, Dale Brisby. So you had Dale in a little box and Cody in a little box and the rodeo in a little box. And Dale and Cody are funny, but they were talking about, really random stuff. And then the only thing that and you've said this before, Kendra, and I agree with you, and Ann Bleicher said this, when they did chime in on rodeo competition, you got to be careful there, right? Because if you're, are you calling action or not? Does that make sense? You know what I mean? You know, oh, she threw a loop. You know, so I thought it was novel, and who knows, 1,000 people may love it. You need to check into it, Kendra, and watch it. I'm interested in what you think of it. Dale was on there. Cody Webster's on there. They were just talking randomly while the rodeo's going on. So I didn't love it, but I didn't love the Manning cast either, in fairness. So I'm not saying that people won't love it. I don't really know. It may be a generational thing. But that's what it was, Kendra. So you need to check it out. I mean, you watch more rodeo. You should get the Cowboy Channel Watcher of the Year Award. For sure.
I seem to not be able to get enough.
Awesome. All right. Well, we want to thank all of you for joining us. Kendra, any last thoughts from you? Greg, anything bedazzling you want to pitch?
Oh, we need to talk about next week, though.
Oh, we do. So, for all of you fans that are avid and tune in, we thank you for doing that. Greg and I actually at this time in doing the Expos Turf Finale in Pendleton at Happy Canyon Arena. And so what we'd ask you viewers to do, and Kendra has approved, because Kendra's kind of a Nazi on this. Kendra has approved. We are going to ask if you would, we are going to record the episode 2 days later, right, guys?
One day later.
See, I can't even, my COVID brain.
So instead of Tuesday next week, we'll be on Wednesday. Same time,
different day, same place next week. We'll give you the insights of, we'll have firsthand knowledge of the Expos Championship, which is framing up to be, it's a $150,000 event. It's, and I'll tell you, I think that the PRCA has the greatest set of rough stock riders that I've, as a whole, that I've ever seen in the bareback riding, in the bronc riding, and in the bull riding. I am dying. I don't think anybody wants to do it, but I would love to put a PRCA team of bull riders together and take on the PBR team of bull riders. I'd love
the
to.
Only
I think it'd be
cool. Thing about what you just said is, did you just say that the rough stock riders right now are better than any other era?
I think so.
Okay.
Qualifying that with the way let me qualify that. Everything was different in competition back then. You know, the cap ropers are faster, the cabs are smaller. I understand that everything's different. Bareback riggins were floppy, loose-sided handles. But I'm telling you right now, the field of bareback riders is as strong and as deep as it's ever been, and I think it's the same way in recent history in bull riding.
Well, I think everything keeps evolving, and I have, thanks to this NFR project, had some amazing catch-up conversations, like last week with people like Dan Mortensen, you know, and today's guys are probably like, who, you know, but what, 6 world titles? I mean, extraordinary. But it's really hard for me to imagine like outdoing the era of Tuff and Lane and Jim Sharp and Ty and Clint Bronger and all that.
But it wasn't as deep. I'm not saying that there's one guy better than Ty or Lane or any of those back in that day. But the field is darn deep in the bareback riding. Deep.
Yeah.
Compared to what it has always been.
Part of that, don't you think part of that is just evolution of the sport? Because that's the same. You could say that for probably every event. You could say it for team roping. I mean, the depth of the field is just, I mean, you can watch old tapes from a long time ago, even if the NFR, and you could go to Wickenburg, Arizona and watch about 50 14-year-olds that would have waxed those guys under today's, you know what I mean? It's just the evolution of the sport rolls on in every event.
Well, and I think that the emphasis and the money and the drive in youth rodeo, including the youth NFR, I think that has been critical for cultivating all of these up and comers. And if you look at their history, they have a history there, and it's cool. It's cool. So,
but I do, you know, before we walk away from this conversation, want to say that, like, in Oliver, you know, he was roping mammoths, and he would have been a cat daddy in any era. So whatever conditions that guy roped in, he would have been a boss, that kind of thing. Same with Roy Cooper, you know, all along. So anyway.
Well, I'm just saying, I believe the rough stock's deeper than it's ever been. So I don't know that there's anybody that's greater than any other cowboy, but I do believe that it's deeper. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us. I've got to go get into a family pro fantasy draft like in 3 minutes. I'm always the loser after the draft that says I'm going to come in last, and I don't do that bad. But hey, everybody, thanks for joining us. We love all of you. Thank you, Kendra. Thank you, Greg. Until next time, remember, one day later, next week, we'll see you. This has been No Spin Rodeo.